Got an answer? Are you trying to get an answer? It's not easy, is it? Who are you? I mean, it's complicated because there's so many different aspects to you. There's so many different facets, so many different faces, so many parts of you. And you can't copy someone else, because even if they have an answer, and even if they've got a good answer, that's who they are. Who are you? Here's a long list of things beginning with C which make up or contribute to who you are. There's your culture. That's your background and your family. That stuff that you've picked up through being in your home. You've got things about you which you've got from your parents, who maybe got them from their parents, who maybe got them from who knows how many generations. Your culture contributes. That's your nation, and that's the way things are done here. There's your company, your friends. That all shapes who you are. There's your chat, the things you talk about, the way you talk about things. There's the choices you make, or the choices you would make. There's the concerns you have. You know, some people are not bothered by something, and someone else is overwhelmed by it. We all have different concerns. There's your church. That contributes in part to who you are. It helps shape who you are. There's the clothes you wear. For some people, that's a very big part of who they are. There's the clutter of your life. Some folk like to identify themselves by the fact they've got an iPhone or some other type of phone or other stuff. Clutter. Maybe you all want to do well and get a BMW or get a Porsche or, you know, and that will show who you are, and that'll be you. You'll be a BMW man. That stuff about you. But who are you? Behind all that and in all that, who are you? Because, you know, it's easy to hide behind stuff. The person that hides behind their smart clothes or their smartphone or their smart car, their smart words and their smart pals. But who really are you? Because the truth is, you're more than all that stuff. All of that contributes to who you are. It helps shape who you are. It informs who you are. But you are more than that. And I hope you see that personality doesn't come in a hanger. You know, you buy your clothes in a hanger, but that doesn't make you you. You know, in the course of a day, you wear your pajamas, you may wear your school uniform, you may wear smart clothes because you go out somewhere smart, you may wear gym stuff because you go for a run. In the course of a day, you wear lots of different types of clothing, but you're still you. So it doesn't come in a hanger. God gave us clothes to cover our shame. Adam and Eve didn't need clothes initially, because they had nothing to be ashamed about. So clothes cover our shame, but clothes were never meant to be your glory. They're just something that make you decent. And there's nothing wrong with having an iPhone. Nothing wrong with having a BMW if you have a BMW. There's nothing wrong with having lots of stuff. But that doesn't really describe who you are. Who are you? You know, there's different aspects. There's what people see. There's what you feel. And then there's what you really are. You want to write down these three aspects? There's what people see. So that's what others see. There's what you feel. And then there's what you really are. And these three things can be completely different. And there's layers, there's levels of what we might call intimacy, in that not everyone knows you as well as your close friends, your close family. So if you meet a stranger in the street, they just know you on a very superficial level. But if somebody gets to know you better, well, that's what happens. They get to know you better. They see more of you. They understand you better. They understand and see some of the real you. And you might not be deliberate about that. It's often subconscious. But have you ever noticed in your house, when you've had visitors, as soon as the visitors leave, the family kind of goes back to normal. Your mother kicks off her uncomfortable shoes and your father sits back in his sofa and the children go off to their own rooms and start doing their own stuff, and it all goes back to normal. Because when you had visitors in, you were on good behaviour. You were presenting and portraying something. It wasn't untrue, but it just wasn't you at your basic level. And I'm conscious as a minister that I see folk in their Sunday best. Literally, in the sense that they wear their Sunday best in their clothes. But also I see people in their Sunday best in their behaviour, because people behave very well for the minister. And if they know you're coming to their house, they make a special effort, and it's yes sir, no sir, and that's okay. But that's just an aspect, that's just a level. But who are you? In the midst of all that, when there's no one looking, and there's no one to pretend to, and there's no one to put on a good presentation for, who are you? I think the truth is that you are a complex combination of more things than you're aware of. The reason why it's so hard to answer that question and write down who you are is because there's so much that feeds into it. And it's always changing. You're not who you were yesterday, because today is different. And today you've seen things, learned things, met people, done stuff. And it changes. It informs. Some things you've forgotten. There's new things to think about. And in a sense, discovering who you are is part of life's adventure. Who are you? But here's another question. What if you don't like who you are? What if you don't like the real you? What if you're not entirely comfortable with the truth? And what if others don't like that? You ever thought that? Ever felt that? What if other people don't like me? Maybe that's one of the reasons why we put on a front. We put on a face. We wear a mask. We act a part. Some of that's to hide, isn't it? And that hiding is because maybe there's fear. Well, if that's my first heading, who are you? And I haven't told you who you are, because it's not my place to tell you who you are, but these are some of the questions, these are some of the thoughts you should have. Here's the second heading. Who do you want to be? And that's an important question. Who do you want to be? Because we're all changing all the time. Nothing, we don't stay the same. And we have in our minds an idea of what we should be like. You have in your mind an idea of what you should be like. Well, what is that? What is it you want to be? You know, some people will say you can be anything you want to be. I don't think that's true. I know it's not true. You can't be anything you want to be. But yet, God has given you potential and He's given you great potential. So it's not that you don't have potential, but you can't just be anything. But who do you want to be? And is that idea of who you want to be, is it realistic? You know, some guys and they want to be girls. Some girls and they want to be guys. That's just not realistic. It doesn't matter what you say and it doesn't matter what doctors can do. That's just not realistic. There's some folk and they always want to get A's in all their exams and that's just not realistic. There's some folk and they always want to be the centre of attention. That's just not realistic. Some folk want to be great at sports and that's just not realistic. You know, we've all got different gifts and abilities. Some folk will be great at sports. Some will get always. Some will be the centre of attention. Some will never be the centre of attention. But we all, you all have potential. God has made you. Not just as you are, but He's made you with gifts and skills to fulfil and to use. Who do you want to be? You know, and the truth is that there's times when you feel good and so you have this aspiration after being a kind of a superstar probably. You reckon one day you'll be it, you know. You'll be in control and you'll have what you want and everything will go well. And there's other days and you feel kind of down and you think, I'll never be nothing. I'm a disaster. Things aren't going to work and I'm always going to fail. You fail an exam. You have a maths test and you do really badly and you think, my whole life's rubbish. And we fluctuate from one extreme to another. Well, who do you want to be? It's good to have a... It's good to think about what you're aiming towards. And that's part of what makes a person is this concept of the ideal. Everyone is able to think beyond what is true now to how it should be. People are heading, are aiming for something. So there's who you are and there's who you want to be. But there's bad news. And the bad news is this. No one ever lives up to their ideal. No one. No one ever lives up to their ideal. And that's what insecurity is about. Insecurity is about your feelings when you see the difference or the distance between what you are and what you want to be. So you hear of glamorous film stars who are meant to be the most beautiful women in the world and yet they don't feel confident because they don't think they're beautiful. Because they think they should be even more beautiful. And people who are good at something and yet they feel insecure because they think they should be better at something. And there's an insecurity because the ideal seems out of reach. And people hide from that because it hurts. And they hide from that in lots of different places. And I thought of some of the places where people can hide. And you can maybe, when you're discussing in your groups, you can think of some other places. Or you can say whether you agree with these or not. The one place where people hide is in a kind of an excessive insecurity. It's the person who says, I'm rubbish, I can't do anything. I'm no good, I've never been good. And they say that all the time. But do you know why they're saying that? They're saying that so you say, oh, you're great. No, you're fine. Oh, you're splendid. Oh, you're champion. Oh, I think very highly of you. So the person is kind of hiding behind a false humility because they want you to lift them up. And they reckon that if they set the standard so very low, they'll never fail. The opposite extreme of that is a person who hides behind an excessive confidence. And that's the person who's full of themselves all the time. I can do this and I can do that. And they talk about how great they are. And they're trying to just kind of make what they're saying true, though it's not true. And you can see that. And you all know folk like that. And it can do your head in when you hear, oh, he's always talking. And he's always saying he's great. And we all know he's not. Some folk hide behind aggression. And that's a bully. The bully nearly always is a sad, scared person. And the bully tries to take control of their life, which is out of control, by putting upon you or putting upon someone else. So if you've ever seen someone, whether it's at school or whether it's in a sports club or something, and they're throwing their weight around and they're always trying to show off and be the on top, that's probably because that person feels way down. It's a hiding place. Other folk hide. They hide by focusing only on one aspect of life. You ever heard the phrase, that guy's an anorak? You know, he's a train spotter. It's just someone, he's just, his whole life is taken up with one thing, and he focuses on that one thing, doesn't bother about anything else. And he's so taken up with that one thing, he tries to bring control to his life by being in control of it. So you know everything about spotting trains, or you know everything about what, it doesn't matter what it is. Or some folk hide with friends who are just like them. So you get different kind of fashions. And there was a while where it was fashionable to be a goth, which was a dropout. And you were trendy if you were not trendy, in a sense. And the idea was that everyone who hung out together, they were all dropouts. So if you were all dropouts, then you couldn't drop out because you were a dropout. But actually, it would be very easy to drop out of being a goth. You just have to wear smart clothes or brush your hair or dye your hair in a different colour. But that's a hiding place. Hanging out with kind of a special group. Some people hide by being distant, never making friends. Always pretending, but never actually being true. No close friends, no close family. Some folk hide by always talking. Kind of controlling what's going on by just speaking. And amongst all these words, there's a scared person hiding, hoping that you'll never ask them a question. Some folk hide in an alternative reality of TV and computer games and make-believe. That's really what alcohol and drugs are about. It's about changing the reality or how you feel about the reality. Some people hide in excuses and they blame everyone else. The first heading was, who are you? The second heading was, who do you want to be? And we've just spoken about the problem when these two things don't add up. This is my third heading. Is who should you be? Who should you be? You know, it seems that everyone's searching for themselves. People say, I'm just trying to find myself. I'm just trying to get in touch with myself. But who should you be? And is it right to always be true to yourself? You know? To answer that question, you have to ask another one and say, who has the right to define who you are? I think your mum and dad have the right to define who you are. Do you? No? Do your mum and dad have the right to define who you are? I think mum and dads have significant rights. But mum and dads have limited rights. Mum and dads have the right and the responsibility of teaching you and showing you, protecting you, guiding you, and you must respect that. But they have a limited right. And if it was mums and dads I was speaking to here today, I'd be making a different emphasis. I'd be telling them of the need to let their children grow up and make their own choices. And the older you get, the more free you are to make your own decisions and even to make your own mistakes. But I'm not speaking to mums and dads. So what I'm saying to you is that you have to respect your mums and dads. And even when you disagree, you have to respect and you must consider what they have. And I don't think you have to agree with everything they say. You don't have to do everything they say. But you must have a very good reason for not doing what they say. Particularly when you live at home under their responsibility. When you've left home and you've set up your own home and you're living your own life, they still have a very significant place and you still must respect them. But yet you have more freedom to make your own choices. But when you live at home under their care, you must honour them. So if mum and dads don't have the ultimate the right to define you, what about yourself? Do you have the right to define you? Do you have the right to decide what sort of person you'll be? Is it your decision to make? That's what we're told, isn't it? Be what you want to be. Do your own thing. Be true to yourself. Maybe Hitler was true to himself. You have limited rights as well, just like your mum and dad. You're not allowed to do absolutely anything you want. Now, that's not politically correct to say that, because we're told that you can be what you want to be, and if you're a boy and you want to be a girl, yeah, that's fine, we can make that happen. But you can't. The Bible sets limits to what you can be. You're not allowed to be what God says you cannot be. So your parents have limited rights and you have limited rights. So who defines what you can be? You maybe guess the answer. The answer is God. God sets the parameters, the limits, the boundaries for your life. Now, that doesn't mean you have no choices, and that doesn't mean that you're not allowed preferences, but it means that God has set boundaries and limits, and you're free to choose. You want to choose to study maths or to do physical education, you want to do physics or you want to do chemistry, you want to get a Saturday job or not, you want to go and work in an office or work in a field. These are all choices you can make. But God has set boundaries. And the boundaries are this: you must work, and you must learn, and you must be faithful, and you must be true. So God has set boundaries. So God ultimately has the final say. And you know what? That's wonderful news. That's great news. That's not something bad which is imposed upon you, but that's liberating. It's liberating because God's law is good. So what God says you must do and what God says you mustn't do, these are wise and safe and good boundaries and limits. And within that, there's a whole space for you to live and live a wonderful life, full of choice and of colour, different experiences. And the Bible tells us that God, who sets these limits within which you are to live, is a God who shows mercy to us, even when we've stepped out with these limits. And God calls you and me to come and to be reconciled to Him, to be His friend. It talks about God accepting us even though we've stepped beyond the limit. It's not wonderful to be accepted as you are, in whatever state you are, to be accepted by God, that He would make you new, that He would make you true, so you might live safely within His limits. God doesn't demand that we're all the same. You have different gifts, different skills. You're unique. And in God's kingdom there is great diversity. And that's something we should celebrate. I know this is sort of politically correct language, but it's used in the wrong way. But we should celebrate the diversity. That in God's kingdom, there is a space for you and there is a space for me to live and to serve Him with your particular gifts, with your particular interests. But while there's great diversity, there's unity. Because we have one purpose and one goal, and that's to glorify Him and to enjoy Him. I'm just going to finish with a few comments. One is this: the question of who you are, this question of identity. Do you think it's a problem in poor countries where people are hungry and working hard? I think it's a problem when folk wake up starving and have to go out and work in the fields and they're desperate and they're wondering where their next meal will come from and they do nothing but work all day and go home and sleep, get up to work hard the next day. I don't think it is. I think this question is actually, it's really just, it's a luxury of the rich countries because people have time to sit and kind of think too much. I think we get so caught up with who we are that actually we don't live our lives so caught up with trying to find ourselves that we actually miss ourselves. You know, I want us to think today about who we are, about our identity, but I don't want you to think about it so much that you miss your life. So in order to find the real you, in a sense you have to kind of forget about the real you and just get on with things. The real you will never be found by sitting, staring at your navel. You know what I mean by your navel? It's a medical term for the belly button. You're sitting staring at your belly button, you don't do much. You just think about yourself. And there's lots of people, and that's all they do. They just sit and think about themselves. But that doesn't really tell you who you are. The real you, you're never going to find it by just staring at your tummy. The real you, rather, is to be discovered in a process, in the course of life. God has created a community around you, your family, your church, and beyond that. And it's only in a community that you'll find the real you. Not in isolation from people, but with people. So who are you? That's something that you'll spend all your life finding out. And who you want to be, well, that's something that all your life that will change, because you'll find out more of what you can be and what you should be. Who are you? The fullest answer to that is to be found in relationship with your family, your church, but most of all, with God.